Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
When you think of major developments in public health policy, for example, tobacco control, HIV or AIDS treatments, the treatment of mental illness, journalism has played an important role in developments and indeed advances, whether it's making researchers accountable, publishing new treatments, or investigating particular agendas in the health world. In other words, good quality health journalism is pretty important, i.e. vital to health policy. Tonight we're going to take the temperature of health journalism with Melissa Sweet, who's a freelance journalist, of course, and health writer, and she's with us this evening. Melissa, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
If you could pick one or two pieces of journalism that completely changed the direction of health policy, what do you think that would be?
Well, first of all, I guess, you know, I think of health in the broad sense. So it's not only health journalism that affects health, but journalism across all spheres. And as we were just discussing, there's a Senate inquiry into the future of public interest journalism now underway. And I've been having a look at some of the submissions. And one of the submissions there gives us a really, you know, it's quite a gripping read, actually. Dennis Muller has done an investigative sort of account of Joanne McCarthy's work at the Newcastle Herald, which, of course, over many years she investigated the abuse of children by members of the Catholic Church, which led to the Royal Commission.
Well, arguably, that's right. Arguably, if it hadn't been for Joanne McCarthy, the Royal Commission may not have occurred. She endured a lot of abuse and so on in continuing to write.
And that, you know, that was an incredible commitment, not only by her. Dennis Muller's piece also makes clear the role of the editor in supporting her over a period of time. And the editor made some comment along the lines, these are never the sort of stories that are going to sell newspapers. You know, we could put Andrew Johns's latest groin injury on the front page and sell far more newspapers. So I guess that is raising the issue that it's really public interest journalism that we're concerned about that has a bearing, you know, for the health of individuals and communities and societies and indeed democracy. So a number of the submissions to the inquiry, you know, they use terms like public interest journalism is in crisis. We have a existential threat facing journalism. We have a democratic gap. We have market failure. So, you know, some very strong concerns being raised around the capacity of journalism more broadly to perform its roles that have a bearing on our health. So it's beyond health journalism in that sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the pieces of journalism that have had a huge impact. I mean, you'd have to say to some degree, I suppose. I mean, certainly in tobacco smoking, and there would be, journalism would have played an important role there. Thalidomide, probably.
Absolutely. Asbestos.
Asbestos in particular.
Road safety.
Yeah.
You know, seatbelts, RBT, you know, if you remember back that far, there was huge opposition to it. So, yes, a whole lot of areas where it really does matter for health and the policies that affect our health. So I think this Senate inquiry is actually a really important opportunity for discussing, you know, some of those wider important roles of public interest journalism and why they matter to us all.
These days with the internet, everybody can find out about their health all the time. And there's no excuse for not knowing anything, pretty much, isn't there? Has the role of journalism's changed, though, hasn't it? And that includes health journalism.
Yes, and you know, I think in journalism we're all working in different ways now, or learning to work in new ways. And that's another aspect, I guess, of the times that we're in. It's not only a time of peril, you know, the crisis that, you know, the estimates are that 3,000 journalism jobs have been lost over the last, estimates, you know, vary whether that's 5 years or several years, but thousands of jobs lost. So it's a time of crisis, but it's also, all times of crisis are times of opportunity, and it's an opportunity for journalism to reinvent itself, for innovation. And I think, you know, when you look at accounts on Twitter like Indigenous X, the very popular rotated curated Twitter account that has a relationship partnership with The Guardian. You know, that's been a really fantastic innovation in public interest journalism in one sense. So I think it's about, you know, how can we have policies that support the continuation of the public interest roles of journalism, but also to support innovation, new forms, new ways of doing and working.
Well, how might it go? You say, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, the argument over whether there should be more journalists is over. I mean, there's not going to be. And, you know, traditional models are all gone. And, you know, we're not quite sure what will replace them. There'll be content, there'll be things written, probably more things written than ever before. by who is oh, no, well, actually, that's not true. They'll be written by journalists. But others
performing the roles of journalists. Yes. You may not identify as that, but, you know, if you look at, for example, The Conversation, I think that's a really great new initiative where that's academics true. Are sort of performing some of the roles of journalism. One of the submissions, the Inquiry, Professor Fran Boehm, who's a very distinguished professor of public health from South Australia, she wrote in her submission, a strong public interest journalism sector is vital for enabling healthy people, communities, societies and democracies. And, you know, personally, I was really happy to see people like Professor Boehm engage in this debate because...
Yeah, it's easy for her to say, though, but who's going to pay for it?
Well, that's I'm coming to. I mean, civic society really has to step up. And, you know, we all know politicians will never do anything unless there's public pressure. And I think civic society has to step up and say, you know, some of the work that journalism does really matters. And how are we going to sustain it and support it? Maybe it can be done in other ways, located in other places, like The Conversation, you know, more located in the university sector. So I think we need to be having these conversations at local and national levels, you know, about how we can, you know, whether it's local communities, how can local communities meet their own needs around news and information? We know that's a very underreported area. And if we're going back to health, you know, if there's one layer of government that has a big bearing on health, that's local government. But how often are we scrutinising, you know, the impact of what local government's doing?
Well, we're not. But the short answer is, and it's not going to be scrutinised, isn't it? I mean, it's not going to be because in the past, journalism was paid for by advertising. Now, that's all gone. So who's going to pay for journalism now? The answer is... No one.
Have to find new ways, and submissions to the inquiry look, for example, at what's happening in the United States, where there's been huge job losses. You know, they lost 15% of their journalistic workforce over several years.
Were there good suggestions?
Well, some of them are around, you know, how do we support philanthropic support for not-for-profit journalism. I mean, some of that is around policy, for example, tax deductibility for gifts, but it is around, if we don't have this national conversation, how will philanthropists know that this is a sector we need to develop and support? So that is one proposal that's there. Other proposals, for example, the Public Interest Journalism Foundation, and I'll put up my hand as being involved with that, you know, our submission put up to have a content creation fund in the same way that we fund worthwhile other forms of content, you know, whether it's film or literature, etc. So, I mean, I don't think it's good enough just to say there's no one going to pay for it and it won't happen. We really, you know, we can see all around the world the problems that arise when you don't have accountability, when you have fake news flourishing, and when you don't hold power to account. And coming back to health here, there was a wonderful quote I read recently by Sir Michael Marmot, who is one of the world's leading authorities on the social determinants of health and health inequality, all the factors that affect our health beyond healthcare in particular. He said, if you want to understand why health is distributed the way it is, then you have to understand society. And I think that's such a powerful quote going to the role of journalism in looking at, you know, who is holding power, how is it being wielded, and how is that affecting our health?
Well, health is one of those sectors like food. I mean, for example, look what's happened to food labelling in Australia. Effectively, the food lobby has prevented any meaningful information being given to the public by anybody. Health is full of conglomerates like this, though.
Absolutely,
big drug companies onwards.
The professional lobbies,
even to large health bureaucracies, who themselves have their own, you know, stories that they want told, and other stories they don't want told.
Absolutely, I mean, I think you really get to the heart of it there. That health is a very contested, highly political space with very powerful players, and often, you know, we the community, whether it's as patients or whether it is as a community who wants to have access to healthy environments and to be healthy, you know, often we have the least power in these discussions and policy making and how funding is spent, etc. So, I mean, to me, that's a very strong argument for sustaining public interest journalism for health.
I wonder, though, in the era of the internet, as I say, when people make their own judgments about these things, unfortunately, there are some ideas you simply can't squash. Vaccination, for example. No amount of journalism seems to be able to convince at least an irreducible part of the population that these sorts of treatments are actually valuable.
Well, that it's very interesting that you raise that issue because, I mean, often in health, as in other spheres, a narrative takes hold and it becomes the accepted wisdom when if you dig into the issues a little more deeply, they're more complicated. And so with immunisation and vaccination, you know, there is this narrative that the really big issue is vaccine objectors. Whereas if you actually look at the evidence and the work of people like, for example, Professor Julie Leese from the University of Sydney, you know, the barriers to vaccination are often not around that. They might be around affordability of healthcare, access to healthcare, a whole lot of other things that you can actually tackle, you know, through policy and changing perhaps the way services are delivered, et cetera. So, again, it comes to the importance of actually, you know, digging in, looking for what the evidence is and, you know, going behind, I guess, some of the simplistic
At the moment,
narratives.
There are basically two models, aren't there, for paying for journalism. One is the subscription model, that is, get people to sign up and pay for it, and the other one is the charitable donation model, which is what The Guardian is on about, and indeed, in a sense, what The Conversation, the university-led sector, is on about as well. Neither seem to be particularly successful in replacing what was there. Where do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think it's very difficult. I mean, I'm working in that space. You know, at Croke, we run on a very low budget. You would not believe, you know, the oily rag that we run on. I think these days you can do a lot more with less because, you know, entry into the market to publish is so much more easy than it used to be. The Conversation, I mean, they're an interesting example. I think they've been very successful in a lot of ways. And one of the ways is they actually do have GGR status. So they are, you know, if you donate to The Conversation, you get tax deductibility. So I think they worked very hard to achieve that. But it would be nice if that was much more widely and easily available, for example, you know, to startups, to outfits like Croke or other public interest journalism initiatives. So I think that's an area of policy crying out for attention. The trouble is, you know, I guess politicians, like everyone else, in some ways, it is not to their advantage to promote, you know, public interest accountability journalism. But in another way, it is because you end up with so much better policy. You know, journalism, for all our flaws, you know, we do actually contribute, or we can have the potential to contribute to the policy process. And Dr. Bill Birnbaugh, who you probably might have seen Bill's work over many years, I mean, he's been a sterling investigative journalist out of Melbourne, did a lot of work around tobacco with the Melbourne Age newspaper, for example. He has a submission into the inquiry, and he is quoting some research from the States, which a media economist looked at. For every dollar that you invested in a specific investigative story, I mean, who knows how they come up with these figures, but he came up with almost $300 in policy benefits. So actually putting a dollar on, you know, the policy returns from good investigative journalism.
Okay. All right, Melissa, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.